I'm Christopher Springman. Our guest is Dr. Tanya Stewart, and we're discussing how organizations are working to create awareness and demand for palliative care as a highly desirable team approach to curative care for patients in addition to its traditional role.
There's a study that looked at patients whose physicians talked to them about their end-of-life goals. They asked one quarter of those that they knew to be at the end of their life if they wanted to have hospice care and focus on comfort. Those who opted into the hospice realm they had a better quality of life outcomes at the end of their life, and 6 months follow-up after death, their significant others had less depression, less traumatic stress over the death than the cohorts who did not engage in these conversations.
Speaking of engaging the conversation, one of the ideas of Obamacare was for Medicare to reimburse physicians for having a conversation, a narrative, as it were, with patients regarding end-of-life issues and especially advanced directives. Unfortunately, that didn't go through, but it seems like a very, very modest request.
I would have to say that was one of the most unfortunate tragedies of the political fights that went on with the Affordable Care Act, and it was, in my opinion, a road bump. I don't believe that that it's over. We're going to continue these conversations and request that there be more attention on value in the care that we provide, as opposed to medical mills, as we like to call them, where relationship is not a focus.
Well, the survey results from Living Well at the End of Life, a national conversation, certainly support what you've said. As people become more aware of the advantages of palliative care, they become very, very enthusiastic, especially those individuals who have had a family member, a loved one, mm-hmm. a colleague, a cohort who has gone through this experience and left a very glowing, positive health legacy behind, especially people who die, how can I put this correctly, with style, with dignity, surrounded by family members, mm-hmm. and as the memory lingers on, people remember that so fondly. Mm-hmm. Now, I've experienced this from both sides, with mm-hmm. my family and also with my wife's family. All of our parents are dead. And I must say, there are it's just a world of difference in mm-hmm. terms of how people remember those last few weeks or months of life.
Mm-hmm. Often I ask patients and families to think about, as they look at their book of life, as they enter into that last chapter, and as they move from the beginning to the close to the end of that last chapter, how would those last few pages and few paragraphs read? Would they say that you're with your family? Would they say that you're in your home? Would they say that you're in a hospital, surrounded by nurses or doctors, or in the comfort of your home or other environment that you find peaceful? It is infrequent when I pose it in that way that patients are still struggling.
And when the struggle stops, what happens? Does enlightenment start?
Okay. Well, does the struggle ever stop, or does it just change?
Yeah. Yes, I think it changes.
It just changes, and hope changes as we move forward in our life, and as we enter into the last phase, hope changes. So it may be that we're trying to get to a specific date or an anniversary, and then it may be that we just want our wife to be at our side, or just want to be alone and not let our loved ones see the last breath because we don't want them to suffer. It's amazing what the human spirit can do.
Every oncologist will tell you this about people who hang in there longer than anyone on the house staff mm-hmm. can believe, simply for someone to arrive or for an occasion to happen or some sort of milestone to occur. Mm-hmm. It is amazing, the power of the Spirit.
It is. It is truly remarkable. And, you know, that is the gift that I receive every day in doing this work. The patients, the families, they are the reason. They are the fuel to the fire within me that keeps me going and excites me for life, because they teach me how to live. And I'm so grateful to them for that. And just the human spirit is remarkable.
It's a wonderful gift.
It is remarkable. It is.
Doctor, can you give us perhaps some first-person stories or case histories, a favorite patient story that can really illustrate many of these points, especially when it comes to the whole issue of health legacy, the legacy of memory that a family member is left with after an individual departs, for yeah. better or perhaps for not better.
Well, of course, I'd like to, if I can, share a story, a personal story, and it was the death of my grandmother. And this was when I was 15 years old. So as I was thinking about what led me into the path of hospice and palliative medicine, I have to go back to her story.
And what was her name?
Josefina, but I called her Nonna. She's my little Italian, spoke barely a lick of English, you know, and she put on a lot that she didn't understand us, but we knew she did. But I remember my grandmother being this incredibly vibrant personality, just, you know, in love with life, loved to cook. And my father used to tell me stories about how they had to stay behind in Italy because she had to care for her parents who were dying. And that was very important, to be the care provider to her parents. And when I was 15, my father, I saw my grandmother did not look well. And my father, who's a physician, said, "We need to get you to the hospital immediately." And she said, "No, Roberto, no, I can't, you know, I don't want to go." And my father said, "You have to go. There's no other choice." And she said,
"Now, there's some cultures that associate going to the hospital when you're old and sick with what?"
Well,
With dying.
But, you know, my grandmother, she had been there before. I mean, my dad, being in the medical field, you know, she was very accustomed to going in for tests, to getting different things done. It was mm-hmm. not unusual for her, but something struck her this time. And she said to my dad, and he says this in hindsight, "If I go to the hospital, I'm not coming home." And he said, don't be ridiculous. Let's get you in." Well, multiple things happened when in the hospital. She ends up having a very massive stroke and gets put on a ventilator, a breathing machine. She has all of these lines and tubes just coming out of every orifice of her. And my father calls the four oldest of the seven children into the hospital to see her. And I remember going in with my sister to see my grandmother. And I remember plastering my back against the wall. I was afraid to get near her. Maybe it was just me. My other siblings didn't seem to be so disturbed by it. But I remember on that night that my father came into my bedroom, I was the fourth child. So I was the fourth to be told that my grandmother had died.
Oh.
And my dad, when he went into my siblings' rooms, they all cried and he consoled them. And he came into my room. I had rarely seen my father cry. And he came and he started to cry. And I, not callously, did not shed a tear. It was out of almost a sense that, "Dad, she's in a better place. It's okay. It's okay. And now you need to heal." As a 15-year-old, this was what was going through my mind, that she was really suffering. And I think that experience truly planted the seed for me.
I'm Christopher Springman, and you're part of Life, Love, and Health.
Life.
Love. And Health.